show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, yes, well, love the previous interview with Nancy McLean, also guest on this show a little more recently, but what I love about her is that she's, it's like reggae music, the darker the lyrics, the jauntier the tune, she's quite jaunty. So here we are in a time of useful consciousness. I love that phrase from aviation. It means the maximum time the pilot has to make rational, life-saving decisions and carry them out at a given altitude without supplemental oxygen and before blacking out. So we're in that time, and everything from the aviation manual is quite pertinent. It's like the higher you fly, the less time you have, you know, and all of those things. So here we are, the time of useful consciousness. Earth citizens arise, divination, dedication, political acumen. Caroline welcomes the return of Pat Ewing, who embodies all of those: divination, dedication, political acumen. Former White House staffer, political operative, now dedicated to green strategies, bringing everything in her long journey as full-service adaptogenic political green strategist in all realms, and so on. Welcome, Pat.
Hey, how are you? It's great to be on your show. Thank you.
Yes, and I love the I Ching that you threw, and I was going to throw the I Ching, and I threw the coins, and one of them, on the second line, completely disappeared. It just went away. So it's like, okay, the future's uncertain, and we'll just go with Pat's divination. I still can't find it. Anyway.
That's so funny.
So here
it's
we are.
It's about how a leader adopts collective action, that the leader, because I was asking about Biden and his future as running for president. And it basically said that we need a central leader, and it will be as long as he can assume that role, and he will be able to prevail. So,
right.
It was a actually quite positive sort of function of how to create vision, how to centralize people around a vision, how to see right now how people are in pain and need something to coalesce around. And if that central figure is able to connect our hearts, there is going to be a great wave of opportunity.
Right. Right. Well, so, yeah, and when I tried to throw it, yours is Gathering Together, hexagram 45. It's very wonderful. Collecting and gathering. The way to deal with it is to unite people and things through a common feeling or goal. Concentrate the crowd and turn it into an organized whole. This is pleasing to the spirits, and through it they will give you success, effective power, and the capacity to bring the situation to maturity. This is the time for great projects. Imagine a temple full of images that unite people and connects them with greater forces. See great people. It goes on like that. So, yeah, that's very wonderful. I'll put a little marker in that. So, yeah, much to put on the table. I do also love the Charles DeLint novel called Svaha, first of his that I read. And Svaha means the time between lightning and thunder. So it's like, ooh, ooh. And then just to briefly go back to the time of useful consciousness, right? If you're at 45,000 feet, you have 9 seconds. If you're at 22,000 feet, you have 5 to 10 minutes, and if you're lower than that, you get 30 minutes or more. So, and then it talks about, and we'll think about this with the upcoming press conference, right? Breathing normally is crucial for hypoxia, everybody. Breathing through your nose, not your mouth, to prevent, you know, hyperventilation, slowing everything down, breathing into a paper bag, or talking aloud. Here we are. It helps to overcome hyperventilation, and then you might survive this time. Anyway, so there's that dynamic, and the time between lightning and thunder. So I like that. Should we play the Anna Navarro clip right now, just for fun, to put it on the table?
Sure, absolutely. Go for it.
Okay, so here's Anna Navarro just putting some stuff on our work table.
Worried, and I'm pissed. Frankly, I'm livid. because for the last 8 days, it feels to me, I have seen nothing but breathless reporting. It almost feels like media malpractice of them trying to score the winning goal against Biden. Who can have the gotcha moment? They've been splicing, dicing, cubing everything he says, putting on a microscopic slide, and then looking at it under all sorts of, you know, magnifying glasses. Look, Joe Biden is the nominee. He is the human being standing between us and Donald Trump. I think Democrats need to stop making the case against Joe Biden and start making the case against Donald Trump. I think the media needs to give some parity to the coverage that they are doing, because in their zeal to fact-check Joe Biden, mm-hmm. they too are making mistakes. Yesterday, I saw the Washington Post reporting that Ted Lieu had asked in that conference call for Biden to step down. Except a few minutes later, Ted Lieu went on social media and said, I never opened my mouth. Yeah. Then there was the entire thing with Mark Warner. Look, I saw Joe Biden the day after the debate. I saw him that night at an LGBTQ gala. I hugged him so tight, I almost broke a rib. I thought the Secret Service was gonna come. Girl, you gotta go really deep to get my ribs. He's got less body fat than I do. But I saw Joe Biden. So I'm not an anonymous source. I'm not somebody pretending to have...
All right, I guess that's it. She's not somebody pretending. But yeah, let's just put things on the table. When the July 4th show with Jamie Yeager, he just said the time to replace Joe Biden was 2 years ago, and there's no process to do that now, and so, you know, stay with that. And any vote not for Joe Biden, I'm going to vote for Jill Stein, I'm going to vote for, is a vote for Trump, and then we add, is a vote for planetary death. And I just want to bring in an ally, you know, well, because it's for all of us to be the media, right? I'm very fond of Black Knight 10K on Twitter, X. Twitter's coming alive. The citizenship is coming alive in an intriguing way. He says the media isn't going to save us, so we have to save ourselves. We're going to build Biden's digital army, maybe another word for army. No, we're not going to attack the Capitol, and win in November. And then he had just put hashtag no dem under 1K, you know, and follow everybody on that, and they follow you back. And it's like, oh, Twitter has come back alive. All kinds of interesting people going, oh, interesting, sane people all over, you know, actual community. So I was impressed, you know, by that coming alive. And that idea of, you know, the citizenship, you know, what we talked about, and let me toss it to you, you know, that during the debate, you know, when it first was like, uh-oh, and I was like, no, all you need to do is the Gettysburg Address, the government of the people, for the people, by the people, shall not perish from the earth. It's on the ballot. And bring up the danger and Project 2025. So he didn't do that, but we're doing it, right? We're doing what needs to happen. And now Project 2025 is huge in collective consciousness, right?
Yeah, it's really, it's everywhere now. It's getting everywhere. And if it isn't something anyone on the radio show or someone on the radio show hasn't heard yet, it's worth looking up. But to go back to sort of where these pieces are, there's also some, I want to take this apart a little bit, because there's some really good news. And the good news is there's a coalition of Americans from probably the broadest array of backgrounds that I've seen wanting to oust Donald Trump. And what does that mean? There's an opportunity here from the left to the right to do something collectively and together. And that means right now helping Joe Biden. And the reason that is our system and the timing is just wrong to change. So we wouldn't be able to get a new person on the ballot. Someone else would have to raise a couple $1 billion in a month, which isn't going to happen. And he is still, even now, and some people have said, oh, but polls show him tanking, that actually most of them, and again, these are public polls, so all with a grain of salt, say that he's still in the same place. So I would like to say that with the news media, and I've been through these frenzied attacks before. I worked at the White House during impeachment. You saw it with Al Gore in 2000 and his campaign, in that campaign, where, you know, after the 2000 election, there were actually university studies done showing how horrible the media was to Al Gore and how biased they were. Two or three longitudinal studies showing it. And that's what we're going through now. And I want to be clear what, and I'm going to use the media as a group right now because I could pick on a couple people, but I'm not going to. What they want is to be on air or in that place when Biden says he's leaving. That's what they want. So they're trying to trick him, to get him, to bait him, to push him into a place where they can be the person who said they heard it first. That's what all this media's attention is about. Secondarily, there's an entire group, subgroup of Democrats who feel out of power and put off by Biden and his team's power. And they are fomenting these stories to keep it alive. So you have, and I'm going to name a couple, James Carville, Axelrod, and they are, you know, James Carville, who I worked for, I used to work for him, said basically that the problem with the Democratic message is that it caters to women and that we need to get back to talking to white men. And when he said that, a friend of mine on Facebook said, oh, the 1990s are calling and they want your message back. The Democratic Party is women. It is people of color. It is diverse. It's incredibly diverse. And it's going to, that's the strength of it. And that's where it's going to stay. So you have these, you have fomenters of people who want to be relevant to the media, who want to get on TV, who are kicking this story up farther and faster than it needs to go. And that's what I, that's the issue I see as how to cool that down and bring some sanity back into this conversation. Because ultimately, there's only one way I see that Biden would get, I don't think Biden's going to get out. He's just not. That would have happened. And for you to also to put on the table, it would have had to have happened in the first 10 days. When you look at near misses or when a president got out like Nixon, the pressure campaign, it has to be under 10 days if you look at it historically. So Biden's well past that time. So it's not going to happen. And the only way it could happen is if you have the leadership of the House and the Senate go to the White House and say, you're going to need to leave. That's what happened with Nixon. That's why he left. That didn't happen with Bill Clinton, and that's why he stayed. So unless there is, and so the pressure from the media and the pressure from Democratic operatives, and also, of course, Russian bots and all that kind of stuff, we know about that. That kind of pressure isn't going to sway a president. It's just not going to. So he's listening to a different metric than, he's listening to a different metric than the one that the media wants him to listen to.
Right. And there's a million things in what you say that are great, but our long cahoot, Patricia Ewing, goes well, way before, but back to Clinton. And when you were working for Al Gore, and at the time people were building horrible houses near my house, and I'm like, should I move? I need something that I can only do in Washington, D.C. And you called me up and said, it's Sunday night, I'm in the VP's office, you know, why don't you come over and we do magic, right? So I did, right, and we did, you know, Clinton's chart, and I go, God, you know, he's doing so well. And you said this great phrase, that's because his addictions are the right wing's obsessions. Anyway, that was really useful. And then we went over to the White House and took our own little tour. And sprinkled truth mooty around. So there's that. And then I do love all of our citizen participants. One of my allies says, the big donors, and we'll just let her feisty language, the big donors are just rich scum that don't want Joe Biden to restructure the tax code. The tax code expires in 2025, 2026, no matter who's president. But who is president will make a huge difference to Abigail Disney, right? Disney's on strike now, right? Nor do they want a worker union-friendly president, nor do they want a president whose agencies are attempting to regulate the business that makes them all so rich. Right, regulation. Saturn was on the table, you know, the sine qua non for democracy. And just as a little sidebar, Trump is meeting with Hungarian Prime Minister Orban tonight at 7 at Mar-a-Lago.
At Mar-a-Lago, and, yeah.
Right, and there's still boxes of secret documents in Mar-a-Lago, and Trump loves show and tell, and Orban has just met with Putin and Xi. They want Trump in, right? So anyway, so there's a lot to pay attention to. And then my ally says, I never voted for Disney or any of the top 10 Dem donors. Nobody did. I voted for Joe Biden. And this is a super alert, wonderful, progressive, great human ally. I will vote for whatever the non-thing candidate is. But how corrupt do the Dems want people to think they are that the super rich choose our candidate, right? And we go.
And that's really what Biden said also. That's actually what he said.
Yes.
He said, I'm
yes.
not going to get out of this race because a bunch of billionaires elites. Have decided they want me to and elites want me to. I'm not doing it.
Right.
So yeah, it is, you know, go ahead.
No, you go. I've just got another thing to read from our secret correspondent. But whatever you're going to say.
Well, I just think that there's a wonderful opportunity right now to cut through some of this din and create a coalition of the willing to move us to a better and bigger vision of democracy at this point, because that's ultimately what's losing. It isn't Joe Biden. It's not about Joe Biden. And what I mean by that is, here's what I find really cool about this. You have a crook. And you have an 80 octogenarian running. Neither of them look like George Clooney. They do not look like a Hollywood, and they do not act like a Hollywood version of what a president should be. And what that leaves us with is we have to decide for ourselves, what we think leadership is, what we want out of a leader, how we're a leader in our own lives, and what issues are important to us. We don't have somebody who can vision the role well enough for us that we can ride this out. So we actually have to do homework, and we have to actually think about it, and we have to read 2025, and we have to figure out why Orban is in Mar-a-Lago for ourselves, and what that means, and what that means to us as ourselves, as our families, and our country. And so I kind of love this. I love the idea that all of a sudden Americans have to engage. And as a campaign person, it's what I've always wanted. I would rather lose because of 80% turnout than win because of 40. The more people involved in our democracy, the better. The more people turned on, the better. The more we are thinking about these issues, the better. And sometimes we have to do it from a deficit. We have to learn from, okay, the guy's 80 and or 81, and he's had a stutter all his life, and he doesn't speak as well as he did in the past, but he has still, according to even the German president, he did an amazing job. He has absolutely no did to this last few days. The man has no doubt that Biden can't handle the presidency. And we know that around the edges and his vision, you know, his idea of what he looks like and how he's acting, it might be a little more afraid of being an octogenarian, but his heart's in the right place. His mind is still there. And he has a fantastic team that we don't know what would happen if we decided to put someone else on the ballot. I can tell you from a campaign perspective that it would be devastating. Because we would lose all the momentum that we have. We would lose all the money that we have. I am still trying to figure out whether it would, the Republicans could, if we put someone else on the ballot at the convention, whether the Republicans could successfully or even try to stop every single election in every state that Democrats have that person on the ballot. And if you want to go into that route and you want to open that up to us, we're going into a, they're all going to go to the Supreme Court. Anybody want to take our chances in the Supreme Court? I don't. So there's layer after layer after layer of problems that this would create. And right now, we just need to focus on our vision of what we want to be as Americans and pull back together, create a larger vision, a larger idea, and work for a democracy that can take us into the next decades. And that's what's being asked of us as Americans.
Yes. No, and as we say every show and everything, and we go, yes, and Joe Biden, and then we must also mention Gaza and the egregious moral exclusion and lapse, because he's so good at grief, except in this realm, and it has weighed heavily, I think, on his soul. But at the same time, you know, astute citizen contributors do say, you know, Putin, Orban, and Netanyahu all want Trump to win. So to Netanyahu, the more unpopular Biden is, the better. So the more horrible, horrible things that are going on in Gaza right now, you know, the less popular Biden is among moral people that we know, you know, encourages Netanyahu to do even more horrible things. So we go, ah, oh, you know, and exactly what you're saying, we're dedicating, not distracted, but dedicating to the desirable vision of what is truly best for everyone and where is the path open, you know, and all of that. And yeah, you know, Stacey Abrams, you know, I like that again, the black women community, and also who's standing up for Biden in a sane, calm way as you are speaking, is AOC and the squad, you know.
Don't you love that? Because
I do.
CNN and MSNBC both said, well, you know, AOC, she's not going to go with Biden, and like the next day, she's like, look, we're with him. Here's the thing. So they keep, even CNN has said that Ted Lieu was saying something unsupportive about Biden in the House meeting. And then he had to come out and refute it and said, I never said a word. Nancy Pelosi even had to say what you said about what I said, how you created context around my words was inaccurate to MSNBC. There is so much tension lying right now. And again, he did a bad debate performance and that kicked it off. But it has created a feeding frenzy that I've been on the other end of them, and they're really, really awful. Really awful. I mean, it's a very hard, tough situation to be around.
Right. And for people who say, well, you know, replace him with Kamala Harris, astute people also go, you know where the feeding frenzy would go then? To her, right? And as just the point that you made just, you know, several paragraphs back, you know, the Republicans would take every state to court to keep new Democrat off the ballot, right? You know, Biden has 3,896 pledged delegates. And again, what's on the table? Everybody breathe deeply, time of useful consciousness, no hyperventilating. Breathe through your nose. There we go. The Supreme Court's on the table, the next 40 years of that. Yes, I do love the AOC. And then another David Roberts at Dr. Volz is somebody else, again, guided to, who says, I haven't written much about politics since the debate, mainly because I'm so overwhelmed by disgust and contempt toward this country's media and commentariat. Right, I mean, I did just cancel the Washington Post. You know, it used to eat up an hour of my day because I liked the paper version. You know, it's like, no, because every day and today again, 3-4 stories on the front page about Biden. Uh-oh, I don't know, people call for Biden. You know, it's like, wait, you could be reporting on Gaza and the climate change and the thing and the horror of Trump, you know, but it's like every day, conniption fits. So I had my black marker rewriting headlines, and it's like, this is obscene. But back to Dr. Volz, he says, To be clear up front, I don't give one bleep who the Democratic nominee is. I truly don't. Biden's fine. Harris is fine. A warm puddle of vomit is fine. There is no conceivable resolution to the nomination fight that could change the basic calculus of this race. Preventing a fascist takeover of the U.S. is my top priority as a journalist, as a voter, as a human. If it isn't yours, too, you should feel bad about yourself. If you haven't made the stakes of this election clear to everyone within the sound of your voice, you should feel bad. But I'm not going to rant, breathes deeply, just going to make my one point, which is this: the idea that the process of jettisoning Biden and choosing someone else will go well, will be allowed to go well, is a deeply deranged fantasy. The idea that Dems will do this and will end up feeling unified, that Harris will come out popular, that the dynamics of the race will shift, all of that is bleeping deranged. Deranged is such a perfectly characteristic Dem way. This person, policy, slogan, approach has been irredeemably slimed by Republicans in a hostile media. Let's throw it overboard. That's the Dem way, always with this starry-eyed hope that they can reset, start over, get it right this time. Just as one example, other people have aggregated these. There have been calls for every Democratic nominee of the last 30 years to step aside. Dems practically delight in abandoning their own people, policies, and principles in response to bad faith pressure. They bleeping love it. But I've been saying for 20 years now, the situation is structural. The current situation is an outcome of a particular incentive structure, and that structure will remain exactly the same if Harris takes over the ticket. For centrist journalist pundits, even Dem electeds, the way you prove you are a reasonable, serious person in D.C. is by dumping on the Dems. For the left, the way you prove you're a true radical is by bleeping on the Dems. For the right, well, obviously, everyone's professional incentives are to dump on the Dems. Dwelling on Trump and his fascist movement, however justified, just doesn't bring that juice. He's being snarky here. Doesn't get the clicks and the high fives. So say Biden stepped aside in favor of Harris tomorrow, how long until the vapid gossips we call political reporters find something wrong with her, some alleged flaw they just have to write 192 stories about? How long until the hopped-up mediocrities we call pundits find some counterintuitive reason that the new Dem ticket is flawed after all? How long until the irredentist, I don't know, left gets over the temporary thrill of its new Harris memes and remembered that she's a cop and turns on her? How long before the ambient racism and misogyny in the U.S., sure, they'd support a black woman, just not this black woman? And it goes on. He goes on. It's worthy. I'll post it in my Patreon notes.
That's awesome. That is brilliant analysis. And I just want to say this one quick thing, which is the reason this is among the Democratic operatives, I believe, the reason that, and I'm talking about the top ones, the ones that make their living doing this, that make millions of dollars a year. These people are terrified of Kamala Harris running for president, because if this was a white man as VP, this would not be an issue for them. There wouldn't be an issue. They would not talk about Biden this way, and they wouldn't kick it up. But they're terrified of an African-American woman running for president. And that, to me, in my analysis, is what we're seeing here. And Biden is getting the brunt of it. And having worked for, I was there when people thought Gore might be president. So I was in the White House when the story broke about Clinton, when, you know, that was my job to handle it. So I was there taking those calls, dealing with the press, dealing with the community, dealing with leaders, while they were saying, oh, hey, he's going to be president next week. What do you think? And then they go, but what happened is the news media created a financial boon for themselves on all this anti-Clinton material, right? So story after story after story, anti-Clinton. And it went on for 2 years. And so when Gore ran, when he was finally, you know, running for president and it was announced and everything, the news media had no place to take that apparatus. Does that make sense? They had an apparatus around being negative towards Clinton and a Democrat. They just switched. They took out the name Clinton and they put in the name Gore. That's right. What's going to happen to her. That's what's going to happen to her, because they have a vested financial interest. Here's how the news media works. They take you up and they take you down. on the way up and on the way down, that's how they make money. They're so rise and the fall. They're bringing her up because that's making them money. And as soon as if she gets in, if she gets, you know, if any switch happens, they will take her right out. The best thing politically for her future is for Biden's to stay in. Otherwise, she's going to be they're going to make her into toast. Like she's going to be on the side.
Right.
The news media will be very negative towards her.
Exactly right. We're going to come right back. We're going to come right back on all of these crucial themes. Exactly. My wonderful guest is Patricia Ewing, a longtime political operative in all realms. In all realms, we're going to come back with our magic protective psychic self-defense for all beings. But now, just part of our break music is what's on the ballot, what's at risk. And this is just a wonderful thing from Ishmael Reed and Taj Mahal, Prayer to the Earth. So here we go.
If global trends continue, we will be separated from our huge waistlines, our plasma TVs and cell phones, our oversized vehicles growing ever larger so that one day each American will own a bus. Earth, you are our first class berth in space. You are the stomping ground of the human race. Designer of Dorothy Dandridge's face, of the black beaches of Hilo, of the clay that made Venus de Milo. Thank you for the caps of Mount Tacoma, for scallops and the Alps, for George Clinton's funk, for Thelonious Monk, for trumpets and trombones, for Polonaises, blues, and sonatas, for the Alhambra of Granada, for the bronze of Benin, for the marketplace at Barcelona, for the evidence of things unseen, for Zimbabwe and dolphins at play, for Accra, Abuja, and Mandalay Bay. We thank you for Carmen McRae, and for El Greco of Toledo, for the cathedral at Cairn, for Dambala, Krishna, and Vishnu. Earth, you have blessed us, and now we must wish you well and send you on your journey with or without us. May you be shamrock green again. May you stay out of the way of black holes. May that asteroid 3 miles across that's supposed to hit within 10 million years avoid you at the last minute, just like in the movies. May you survive the nuclear deals. May you survive the chemical spills. May you survive the biotechnology. May you survive the Peckerwood theology. May the Big Crunch theory be all wet. May you spin forever without end. May you survive man, who was full of such promise. Sly and the Family Stone were right that everybody is a star who is composed of the same minerals as a planet, including nitrogen and iron. But we often behave like so much hot air. Earth, will you bear us much longer, or will you continue to give us something to stand on?
Thank you, Ishmael Reed, Taj Mahal, Prayer to the Earth, right? And will you protect us from an asteroid? NASA tells us that Jupiter protects Earth from asteroids. It's such a wonderful scientific fact that's also a metaphor. Jupiter, the intelligence of story and blessing. Our story protects us from asteroids and destruction and all that that's on, you know, life is on the ballot and all good things. And our guest today is Patricia Ewing. We're going to dive back in, but just a little more of what you were saying through Dr. David Roberts at Dr. Volz. So yes, and he says, just to continue a little bit. Say Biden stepped aside in favor of Harris tomorrow, and then as another person says, you know, you want Harris? She's on the ticket. She's on the ticket. You're voting for her. You're voting for her. Just come on, everybody. Breathe through your nose. How long until the vapid gossips we call political reporters find something wrong with her? Yeah, and goes on. Left-center leftists to conclude that sure, they'd support a black woman, just not this one. Dems uniting, feeling good, telling a clear story, receiving credit for their accomplishments. All of that is impossible in the current environment. It won't be allowed. Dems can punch themselves in the face all they want, abandon whoever they want, apologize all they want. They simply will not be allowed to turn the page and start fresh because everyone's incentives remain the same. If they did that, elites, including media elites, would have no choice but to openly and frankly grapple with Trump and what he represents, and they don't want to. And then he says, for some reason, left pundits are pathologically averse to acknowledging that fact, and so they grasp at these straws. If we could get rid of Biden, we could have a reasonable conversation. Yes, sure, you absurd summer children. This election is not a choice between two individuals. We'll come back to that. It's a choice between worldviews, between futures. Do we want to continue down the path to multi-ethnic democracy, or do we want to impose a white, patriarchal, Christian autocracy? At stake is the entire federal civil service, the machinery of state built since World War II, freedom and dignity for millions, democracy itself. That's not an exaggeration. And he goes on, and I'll post at Patreon Visionary Activist Show. I post all of the outtakes, the things that didn't make it into the show, so you can go there, you know, for a pittance, and find all these things. Also, just as a fact, citizen ally on Facebook, Judy Seidel, says Facebook just hired a company run by Jonah Goldberg. I remember him, formerly of the National Review, to do the fact checking on posts about Project 2025. Goldberg is a fellow of the American Enterprise Institute, a Koch lobby, as is the Heritage Foundation that sponsors Project 2025. So they've hired a partisan outfit with ties to Project 2025 to fact-check Project 2025. Everybody, just alert, like, oh no, into the cauldron there, we're going to get rid of that. But yes, all those things that really kind of back up what you've been saying, Pat. So it's like, okay, taking a breath. And then tonight is the press conference that Biden will hold, and already the press is saying, oh, the press is really angry, let's see how this turns out. And it's like, that's not the job of the press. The job of the press is inquiry and dedication to democracy. But so you were saying, you know, we've had some success with our placing a pewter shield around Joe Biden, around Fannie Willis, around anybody working for democracy to fend off the kind of cheese-sucking nya-nya-nya. And you had a thought about the press conference, which will be tonight at 7:30 East Coast time, I think.
6:30.
Okay, right after
East Coast. It's an actual press conference, not a press availability. So it is not. It's an actual press conference, meaning he's going to take questions from reporters, and they have already been saying he has to be perfect. Well, he wouldn't have been perfect 40 years ago. Right? He's never been perfect. It's being an orator isn't his thing. He gets you understand his passion, you understand his heart, he gets his point across, but he is not, you know, it's just not gonna happen. So what we were thinking was, let's put, because of all the ill intent towards a man who's just trying to get through this. Can we put a pewter shield around him, which we've done before? And you had an addition to that, which is for all those who with truly ill intent that are trying to figure out how to make him stumble so they can either make money off it or create political advantage off it. Can that energy be sent back to them in a way? So do you want to talk about your pie idea?
Well, yes, it's something in everybody's magic backpack is the power of boomerang. And I spell it boomerang, M-E-R-I-N-G-U-E. May anything up to no good be deflected back to its source with a pie in the face. sorry, lemon meringue pie, but it's a worthy service to democracy. Boomerang. Boomerang, go back there. And deflecting it. So psychic self-defense for all of us, may we all be preserved from that, deflect that which is up to no good. And something I often use out there when Trump is talking about whatever, that dementors always and only are self-referential. You know, whatever the dementors say, that's what they're doing, right? Whatever they accuse anybody else of doing, that's what they're doing. But yeah, boomerang, a pewter shield with the power of boomerang around the Biden part of our dream, you know? And this is, you know, I've done this, you know, on rare occasions where, you know, mainstream media kinds of things. It's like, no, protect me from answer, you know, only to answer the questions I wish had been asked, right? And not to get finagled or bamboozled, just steady. Well, it's what you were talking about, Saturn. You know, Saturn, leadership, our focus, not distraction. So a blessing that averts asteroids, you know, for all of us is may we all be focused on the desirable vision and not distracted into polarity, which feeds tyranny, right? So, yeah, anything else you want to say about now or the upcoming press conference, you know, that anything up to no good, just go back to its source, like,
right, and
with a pie in the face.
Giving what one of the things that we were thinking about with this pewter shield idea originally is because he was in another spate of negative sort of press and people were on him and all that. And what you and I were talking about is that he, you know, let's just see if we can give this guy some space to breathe. So he can take one full breath, relax himself, and continue on. And so that's what the pewter shield helps to do. It moves out the energy that is surrounding, that is so close on you, that you feel like you can't breathe and you can't move. So can we move some of that out? Just give him some space to have his head and his heart and his vocal cords all in accord, all working together, so that he is doing what we know he can do. I believe he can do this, and we can see him walk this out in a very positive way, because he is, you know, right now, he's got democracy on his back. And the question is, what were, you know, the press and some of the other pundits and some of the billionaires are saying, well, it's too heavy. Take it from him. And the question is, to give to who? How would that work? And is it ours to take? He's asked for this responsibility. Can we support him in keeping up with this responsibility? And what's our job to support him to keep it going? And we, you know, a president is not the only person as well who, you know, works in the government. There are 4,000 people. There are cabinet members. There is a team. He has not had one defection. He hasn't had one person turn around and write a book. He hasn't had anybody say, oh, God, this guy's a jerk. I'm out of here. People are loyal to him. They care about him. They're running this government as functionally as they can within the circumstances we allow it. And the question is, can we just help create some space so that all of our interests in having a better democracy next year than last can come to fruition? Because it isn't just about him. It's about what we need to do to move forward as a culture and as a society and as a democracy. This is also about us. So by helping him and giving him space and pewter shielding him and sending him whatever isn't just about his interest. It's about all of our interest right now, because the forces against him and against our democracy are real. And you are very right about the tax cuts that the billionaires created our deficit, created trillionaires in our culture, created more billionaires than we've ever had or ever, hopefully, God, we ever will have. They're coming up again. And there's a lot of moneyed folks who are sitting, who like Trump, because they know that they're going to make an extra few billion dollars if he gets it back in office. That's the calculation. Has nothing to do with democracy. It has everything to do with transactionalism.
Yes. You know, and what you say, you know, it's like everybody put on your own pewter shield to protect self, so that, and your own pewter shield with boomerang force, anything up to no good, go back to its source with a pie in the face. That we all, we want some breathing room, you know, to protect as much life as possible now, to get through this. And on the other side, then culture of reverent ingenuity, you know, may it flow into place. I love Haruki Murakami's novel IQ 84, where the world is in disarray and two of the protagonists go backstage to recombobulate imaginatively the world. And then at a crucial point, and this is all of us, we pull the sluice gates and the desirable world pours into the actual, you know, that kind of dynamic. You know, and then we can have, you know, then we can dissolve all nation states. Then we can do all kinds of stuff. But to get through this crucial time, and what you were saying, because it was 2 years ago that I called you up and I said, everybody's going, oh, Biden's too old and he's too, and let's put a pewter shield around him. And you said, yes, and around the White House acreage as well, just, and then you called back up and said, it's working. Biden recovered from COVID and he passed Build Back Better under the name of the, you know, Inflation Reduction Act. And at the same time, we didn't know this, but at exactly the same time, because I heard Kim Stanley Robinson and wonderful woman, her name will come back to me, working with the Biden administration talking about this. And at the very same time, this is, again, visionary activism, that we need both things, is when, you know, colleagues, Kim Stanley Robinson had said, isn't it great that Biden has put so many smart young women in charge of climate? And here was one of them. And she said, we thought Build Back Better was dead, but then, you know, people were working around the clock to negotiate, and they go, we got it done. Yes, some compromises that we'll work on later, the Willow Project, get rid of that, but huge climate thing. And when that happened and when she passed it was the same day you and I and your little witch daughters were putting the protective shield around Biden that he could gather his wits and do something. So it takes our backstage imagining magic with really truly dedicated people doing actual hard work. It's, they need each other. It's the sine qua non, you know, it's the trickster medicine sine qua non of dedicated, competent action with our magic backstage as well. You know, and for everybody, at least just to vote for the desirable vision, you know, as a crucial part of this dynamic. And so, yeah, psychic self-defense, protecting all teammates, you know, make your own cabinet of flora, fauna, fungi. You know, last election magic council that Pat and I have convened, and we'll bring it alive again in September. But we had people make their own ballots, draw your own ballot, you know, make it beautiful with flora, fauna, fungi, you know, and then go out into the woods or wherever you are that you love, that's and leave it there, right? So voting in all worlds, going, this is what I'm really voting for, and this is, you know, the expedient thing that is most likely to get us there. But it was great because there were a number of people back in 2020, you know, 2022, who were like, oh, I was going to vote my conscience. You know, it's like, no, we can't afford that. But you provided the imaginative possibility. I can vote for what I really want and then vote for what's likeliest to get us there. So, yes,
there's a vision, but you have to couple vision with strategy. And the question now is, how do we get there? How do we keep our democracy going? The other question is, how much work? There's always a calculation that we need to consider, which is, how much will it cost if I don't take action? And this is a cost that, because I do a lot of policy work on the side, and it's always something I love to include in the policy work I do. And what I mean by that is, okay, if you want affordable housing, here's how much it's going to cost you. But if you don't do affordable housing, here's how much it's going to cost you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're at now. This is, if you know, what is it going to cost you to actually support a candidate that is most likely to win, that is probably the only one that can run right now? And what is it going to cost you if you don't? And the question isn't, again, it's not about Biden. It's about the space we need to get on the other side of this Trump issue and this 2025's desire to create a, you know, right-wing hell out of our country. And we're facing some very existential issues. And right now, Biden is the only guy that can stand. I know my kitty in the background. Biden is the only guy that can stand in the fray, and he's the only one. And the second thing is, I know she's agreeing with me.
I like it. She's agreeing. She's like, no, I'm voting for Biden.
Yeah, she's my literal cheerleader. So yeah, she's rocking and rolling. So the question is then, what would it cost us if we dump Biden? What would we have to make up? How much extra time would we lose? And then, again, the news media isn't interested in choosing our candidates based on whether they think they'll be good in office. They're interested in choosing our candidate depending on how big of a headline they can get and then how they can take them out. And I think Kamala Harris would make a terrific president. But when I've seen her run for office before, because I've seen her run for office in 2019, she's doing much better now than she was in the beginning of her vice presidency, but she did not run a good campaign. She did not run a good campaign.
Overmanaged.
And she, in 2019, she did not run a good campaign. And actually it was one of the worst campaigns of all the people that ran. And I think she's wonderful. I think she will make a good president someday, but I'm concerned because she couldn't put a team together in a way that they functioned as a team. So that concerns me. So how much are we going to lose if we have to take a pause? And then you're right that the news media will not let up on this person. They will take out anybody, whether it's Gavin Newsom, Pete Buttigieg, you know, Kamala Harris, yeah, they're poised to take them out.
Gavin Newsom was married to Kimberly Guilfoyle, and that does it for me. That's like, no, that's a disqualifier. Just couldn't possibly. And then I just want to bring in a little of our magic. All of creation is rooting for us humans because, you know, they're trying to help, right? So right now, Pallas Athena, a little asteroid of strategy, prismatic perspective, is stationing. It wants our attention, at 19 Scorpio, which the grumpy men philosophers and astrologers hated that degree. They called it the accursed degree of the accursed sign because its image is drawing back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway. And the grumpy men, you know, and modern, you mean no priests? And we might add no priests, no pundits, no whatever. And we're like, right, no priests. Just, you know, we're drawing back two dark curtains. And right now it forms a grand trine. It trines Saturn, our dedication, going, all right, everybody. You know, and the Republican convention does open on Monday. But there's a lot to play with and, you know, in our animistic realm, because it's like anything for which we have a name, we have a relationship. So all the steady, boring drumbeat is like the Democrats are in disarray. And so we get to say, who's a good disarray? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Oh, good disarray. Go to the Dementors. Go to the Dementors, you know. And the Republican Convention is beginning with a Mars-Uranus-Algol conjunction. Algol, just from the gloomy part of astrology, Algol is a fixed star associated with beheading, right? And it's like, oh, well, who loses their head? Metaphorically. But it is, and it's also an awareness of danger. And the moon is in Scorpio, revealing danger. You know, there's a lot more I'll be writing about, you know, for the Patreon team, you know, just backstage and other things too, you know, going, what is the Republican convention? No idea. You know, but there's a lot of, you know, the moon in Scorpio saying, you know, at 15 Scorpio, which is about calling in the desirable. So July 15th, you know, at 5 p.m. when the Republican Convention opens, it's not just the Republican Convention, it's everywhere that we are. And so it's like, call in what is useful. May anything up to no good be revealed, rendered harmless, and in the fullness of time be an occasion for mirth. You know, we want to play in that realm. So, yes, and there's it goes on and on and on, you know, just, you know, Saudi Arabia, you know, Arizona its water aquifers are being drained completely because a huge chunk of its land is owned by Saudi Arabia that's growing hay for export to Saudi Arabia to feed their cattle, sucking the thing. So who's you know, Jared Kushner, $2 billion from Saudi Arabia. Anyway, all these many things. And I love what Michael Stocker had written, again, things that are on the table that we might lose, you know, criminal prosecution for protesting. And he says, so old Joe may not be firing on all cylinders, and the Gaza disaster is hideous. But Donald J. Trump has said many times, there will be bloodshed. This will not be the blood of all those gun-toting MAGAs. It will be our blood. He said, and Michael says, unfortunately, this election is not the time to make a personal moral statement to Joe. Go, okay. You know, it's time for everybody to be sort of grown-ups. But I hand it to you for any magic or otherwise magic pragmatic. They're the same thing. Magic is pragmatic. Pragmatism is magic that you want to spiral forth in our last minutes here.
That the... Even though what you're seeing, what you may be seeing, and hopefully you don't watch mainstream media, but with what you're seeing in the media or what you're seeing about Joe Biden or what you're seeing about this campaign is completely the opposite of what we're seeing on the ground. And people are interested in politics in a way and the future of the country in a way that they've never been before. And this coalition of people goes from the most right wing to the most left wing. And we have an opportunity. This is an amazing opportunity. If we can breathe some life into a large, huge coalition of people who are interested for the first time, like see them waking up for the first time, see them coming out of a deep sleep, see them saying, oh, wow, this is beautiful. Look, there's trees and grass. And isn't this a gorgeous planet and a gorgeous country? I'm really interested in this, and see them waking up to ideas and possibilities. And with that, we can actually develop something really beautiful. And the hope is right underneath. I believe that the negativity that you see is actually equal to the possibility right on the other side and the hope on the other side. That it's equal to it, and it's even probably larger. So if we can move this on out, we have a great possibility to get this to figure out who we are as a country again and revision and reimagine ourselves in a really wonderful way.
That's great. And Venus is emerging from the underworld tonight, tomorrow, according to our latitude, as the evening star of peace opposite Pluto. So beauty returns at a time of danger. That's wonderful. Thank you, Kahooter, backwards and forwards in perpetuity. Patricia Ewing, thank you so much. Visionary Activist Show on Patreon for more outtakes. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. Wonderful, wonderful board up. We will reconvene next week. I'm pretty sure that it'll be the last day of the Republican Convention, and we will cover it in that woofy form. Thanks, team. Woof. Oh, yeah, delay.